Game On, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And you're most welcome to the Friday edition of Game On. Soccer, racing and much more rugby to come as well between now and 7 o'clock. We are going to hear from Leo Cullen in advance of Leinster looking to basically control their own destiny as they look to steamroll home advantage through the latter stages of the Investec Champions Cup. They're at home to Bath tomorrow, live on Radio 1, live on RT2 television. The head coach has been chatting to Michael Corker and we'll hear from him shortly. It's been one of those roller coaster weeks of Premier League that you just stick on the television and there's a match of some kind on. So it rolls on. Not tonight, but across the weekend. We'll chat to Fergal Brennan and Alan Colley about that. And we will have Jane Mangan to look ahead to the Clarence House Chase at Ascot and why the racing world should revolve around Thurles this Sunday afternoon. So all of that to come between now and the end of the programme. 51552 for your texts. Or you can find us across social media at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Alan Colley, good evening.
Damien, how are you?
Not too bad, and you?
I've been better.
Okay, well listen, I think most people will know you're alluding to League of Ireland matters, but sure, listen, we will talk about that when there's official news to talk about. Is that okay?
You're the boss.
Oh, well, listen, okay. Howard, listen, I know it's one of those strange days in news that, like, loads of team news around the rugby. A 10-year contract, a 9.5-year contract for Erling Haaland at Manchester City, which we're going to hear from Pep Guardiola later on in the programme. We will chat more about this with Fergal Brennan, but very briefly for now, that's a real statement from Manchester City about the charges, about financial fair play in the week that no clubs were punished under the PSR regulations. That's the one of... We're not going anywhere.
I agree totally, Damien, and it's funny because it's been so quiet on that front that I actually sensed, and you look at the decline in their form and the way Guardiola has been over the last wee while, that it was almost as if those charges that were hanging over them was that they're guilty. Something has to happen here. But by coming out with that statement today of the Haaland signing, there's another couple of players on the way in January, it's almost as if a real response to that, to say we're going nowhere and be careful what you wish for in terms of those charges, because they obviously feel as though maybe they are in the clear. So it'll be interesting to see on that front. But the other thing that struck me about that, and you've alluded to it there, Damon, I don't ever remember anyone signing a 10-year contract, ever.
The only time that it really became relevant, and it was for a different reason altogether, was if Chelsea signed Alan Colley from Manchester
Mudrick
United.
Mudrick was 7, wasn't he? 7
and the years. Reason is, if you sign a player for 100 million and you give him a 10-year contract, you can write that off in your accounts as 10 million a year rather than 100 million. So it's called amortization.
Brilliant.
That's what the accountants
and
will tell
you. And I remember
you.
The reason they were doing it around that. If, unfortunately for them, Mudrick's form has dropped off the cliff, so they'd probably not get that money back.
It was clever accounting.
Yeah.
It just meant that rather than, if you're a big spending club, rather than having 100 million sitting on your balance sheet as an outgoing, you had 10 million
spread
over 10 years.
Yeah.
But I don't, listen, Fergal might know more than us when he joins us, because he's at press conferences and he's hearing about these things on a more regular basis. I don't see anything like that here. I think this is just he's our talisman and we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and that's from the club's end of things. I'd love to know from his point of view, because it's a long commitment, Damien. Like, at some point...
Sorry, is it?
Yeah, it is.
No, and I tell you why. Who owes all the power in football at the moment?
Oh, yeah, but what I mean, if someone's going to break that contract, they're probably going to have to pay double of what they probably would have had to pay before this if he only signed a 2 or 3 year contract.
I think if any player in the Premier League decides, I want out of here, you know, like Marcus Rashford, look what's going on at United. He clearly wants out the door.
Yeah, but
player power, I think, you're telling me in 2 years' time if Haaland decides, listen, I don't fancy this.
But that's compare like with like. Rashford, currently at the moment, form going nowhere, looks sulky, surly, disruptive, whatever phrases you want to put on it. Haaland is red hot the last 2 years, so he's the hottest property in football, if you like.
I agree with that.
Yeah, so my point is, from his point of view, it's all right at the moment. I'm thinking I'm happy in Manchester and Pep is great and my teammates are great and all that, but why not just commit to a 2 or 3 year deal?
But are you telling me
at some point Real Madrid or Barcelona or any other club, big club in Europe, maybe he might fancy going away, he's browned off with Manchester, it's always rain and all these different things we hear, why commit to 10 years?
But are you telling me if he downs tools in 3 years' time, or any player, pick any player in the Premier League, decides, I don't fancy this, who has the power? The player has the power.
All the power,
and
yeah.
And if Man City have an Erling Haaland in a couple of years' time who's not remotely bothered and is causing hassle around the place,
they'll have him out the gap if they want. And equally, it's all well and good to sign a 10-year contract until 2034. You and I have no idea what clauses are in it. There could be loads of clauses in it to
True,
say...
True, but my point is, if it's only a 2 or 3 year deal, they might get, you might get him for 80, 90, 100 million.
Mm.
It could be 170, 180, 190 million now when, because of the 10-year contract or whatever the case may be. Now, whether he'll see out that contract, who knows? I just thought it was strange. And as you says, maybe it was from the club's point of view, a statement because of what's going on. But just from the player's point of view, why commit to 10 years? Now, I know the money's ludicrous, but he'd be getting ludicrous money no matter where he goes, whether he signs a 2-year deal or whether he signs a 10-year deal. It was just... As I said, I've never seen it before, especially from someone like him who's hot property, can pick and choose wherever he wants, pick and choose his next move. The biggest clubs in the world, everybody would want him. Why commit to 10 years? It's a strange one.
Yeah, listen, we'll wait and see. I would be amazed if he's still there in 2034.
Not at all.
You and I might still be here in 2034, but we'll chat about it. I'll tell you what now, Leon. Leon's outside the window. Leon, 10 past 6 on the 17th of January 2025. Let's bookmark this and we'll come back in 2034 and work out if Erling Haaland is still there. Listen, we're going to go through the rugby team news in a minute or two. I know you glued to the snooker.
Unbelievable.
All day.
Trump. Judd Trump. I love him.
Yeah.
And you know why I love him as well, right? And I was thinking about this, Damien. So, for the first time, and you know I love snooker, right? But for the first time today, I looked at Judd Trump in a way where I'm thinking, O'Sullivan, Hendry, Davis, when is he in the conversation? Now, I
why
know
is he not in the conversation?
But people will go back to what he has won. Like, you've obviously, O'Sullivan, Hendry, Davis have the 7-7-6 through the maths. So that's over 20 world championships between them. Trump, I think, has only won it twice, am I right in saying? Once or twice. So you obviously, people will judge it on that kind of thing. But just in terms of the level of snooker that he's at and played at over a number of years, he's definitely heading towards that way. Because he's, and you know what I love about him, on top of the talent, he came into the studio afterwards, breath of fresh air, just his approach. And you're talking there about money and players. He's doing it to get up to the trophies. Obviously, the money comes with it, but his desire and his appetite and hunger to do better is to get up into the conversation with those lads to win Masters and win World Championships. I just think he's phenomenal. And poor Ding was sitting in his chair for about an hour and a half and didn't get a shot.
The problem, though, with all of these things is, like, you look at the eras that you're in. Like, is there... I'm not saying Hendry won
what
he won.
That's a good era at the moment, Damien.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Whereas Hendry dominated in an era where if he was 10 out of 10, there were a load of like 6 and 7 out of 10, someday 8 out of 10s. Well, Jimmy at his height was going up against
Ken?
Davis was going up against
Ken.
Yeah, okay. What was Ken? Okay, who's the greatest in your opinion?
O'Sullivan.
Right. So if Ronnie O'Sullivan is your ultimate 10 out of 10. Where's Ken?
Over his career or against O'Sullivan?
Over his career.
Well, he won a world championship.
Yeah.
He'd be a 7.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Whereas Judd Trump is in an era now where Judd Trump is probably... This is getting really interesting. Judd Trump's probably an 8 or a 9 on a good day.
Oh, he's a 9.
But there's loads of 7 and 8s out there.
Yeah, there is.
Does this make any sense?
Well, no. Well, you even look at the lineup for the semi-final now. And these might not be household names to people, but you've Sean Murphy left playing probably the best snooker he's played in a long time. Mark Allen also playing some unbelievable snooker, won that tournament in Riyadh before Christmas as well. And the winner of Kyron Wilson, who's the world champion at the moment, against Luca Brasel. So the Masters lineup is unreal for the weekend and for the semi-final. It's kind of like what you're saying, maybe a little bit, when Tiger was dominating, fair enough, but it's very hard to win in golf
exactly.
Now.
Yeah. Willie O'Connor, the darts player, was on Saturday Sport the morning after Luke Littler won the afternoon after Luke Littler won the World Championship. Mm. And Littler had talked about, I want to emulate
Phil Taylor.
Yeah, with his 15, 16 titles. And Willie was like, there's not a chance he's going to do it. And it wasn't that he wasn't capable of doing it, or he didn't have the talent
to do it.
It's that the competition is too good. Mm. And that's the point about Judd Trump, is that Judd Trump is a phenomenal player with one World Championship title in an era where you go into the World Championship saying, Ronnie aside, there's probably 4 or 5 fellas that can do it.
Yeah, and that's fair. That is fair. It is very tough. But you look at the season he had last year, I think he won 5 ranking events. It was phenomenal. Mm. So he is dominating.
But the problem is...
But you need to win the big ones.
You need to win the big ones, because that's the one that most of the people
will judge on.
Right, there we go. I think we're in agreement for the most part.
So he's fourth. Is he fourth on the list?
Oh, here. No, he's only won one World Championship.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
John Higgins ahead of him. Williams. Yeah.
But I'm not saying you
But
ever
by the time Trump finishes,
he'll be
in that pantheon of those three, okay. I think. That's how good he is.
There you go. more Trump talk than you'll get on current affairs programmes on Monday.
He's brilliant.
When he's re-inaugurated. He's brilliant. The snooker player rather than the politician. Right. I'm going to move on before we get ourselves into trouble. Rugby. Munster have been able to bring Peter O'Mahony back into their side as they go to Franklin's Gardens. They face Northampton in the Champions Cup tomorrow. He's back in selection as they look to get a victory which will help cement their place in the knockout stages. Leo Cullen has made 5 changes to Leinster's starting 15 from Sunday's win over La Rochelle for their clash with Bath at the Aviva, live on Radio 1, live on RT2 television. Hugo Keane in a first start since October. He's in the back three with Jamie Osborne and Gary Ringrose, who switches to the wing to accommodate Jordy Barrett and Robbie Henshaw in the centre. It's 10 years since Gary Ringrose has started at a position other than outside centre for Leinster.
He's a great player, isn't he?
There's a little stat for you to tell someone tomorrow. You're in doing the supermarket shopping.
I do
tomorrow.
Know he's very good, isn't he?
Yes, Sam Prendergast at 10, Jemison Gibson-Park at 9, Andrew Porter, Rabbi Slimani into the starting lineup. Ronan Kelleher keeps his place at hooker. Jack, what?
Wait, you see this text this, I'm just after
is,
getting.
Is it Ken?
Legendary.
Is it Ken? Is it?
Ken wants a 9 out of 10. He's disgusted.
And you know the worst thing was?
No.
Is it Ken?
No.
I saw Ken
it's
over
better.
Christmas and I was going to stop Ken
it's
and
better
say,
than Ken.
Show me.
I won't say who it is.
It's better than Ken.
Is it Ronnie O'Sullivan? It's better than Ken.
Better There's not many Ken. Better than Ken.
Now, where was I? Jack Conan also comes into the Leinster team. You and I are too excited for 6:15. Caelan Dorris is on the bench. Would you like to hear from Leo Cullen, Alan?
I'm a big fan of Leo Cullen.
Well, he's been chatting today with Michael Corcoran.
Leo, you've named the team and 23 for that match against Bath. 5 changes seems a lot from one week to the other. But good news that Hugo Keenan in, but no Tyke Furlong or Caelan Dorris.
Well, Caelan's on the bench, yeah, so he's good to go. The rest is trying to get a bit of freshness into the group as well with some quality alternatives. So Hugo is back in, which is great. Obviously, has been out for a while. Hugo trained well last week. There's other players that are in the mix this week that, you know, we've had to manage a couple of guys. So Caelan, you know, we've sort of gone back to that formula in the back row that we would have had, if you think back to the Bristol game, which is in round one. Again, Caelan would have come off playing the international the week before. And again, so you're just trying to make some of those judgment calls on how guys are coming through. So that specifically worked okay that weekend. So listen, we've gone back to that formula. Similar with some of the front rowers again. See, Tyke had been out for a while, so we're trying to manage him a little bit. Rabbit went well, we thought, when he came off the bench. Scrum strong, so, and then Thomas Clarkson, obviously he's in the mix as well, so he gives a bit of freshness there as well. So we've a few different combinations. Probably the back line is probably where you talk most, you know, getting Jordy into the centre with Hugo back at 15, Robbie the 13 and Gary the 14, which is what we finished with last week. Jamie, he was due to play 15 at the start of last week but ended up playing on the wing, and Jordy obviously played 15 in the end. He was due to start on the bench, but so it's something that we've seen quite a bit from a training point of view. We saw at the end of last week. I talked to Gary, listened to start this week, and just something that we want to see. There's a couple of wingers specifically that are unfortunately unavailable at the moment, but we think it's a good group and we're excited by the challenge now.
Does that show and kind of hit home the versatility that you have there within your squad?
Wait and see. But we wanted to see what this looks like from the start. And listen, it's the quality players that are there, which is the exciting part. Jimmy's a little bit unlucky, but again, he'll provide impact off the bench later on. We think Bath are going to be a good physical challenge for us. You know, in terms of some of the threats that they have, Coughlin Senior, when he comes off his wing, is big physical. Even McConaughey is a big physical player as well. In terms of Lawrence, Ajomo, those guys, they can be pretty direct in what they do. So, you know, to have like level of physicality that we have there, particularly that 12-13 channel, and even Gary brings a lot of physicality on the wing as well. So, the group are working well at the moment. It's, you know, we're coming to the end of a block of games that has generally been pretty good for us. It's always a challenge at this time of year in terms of conditions and all the rest. Like, the forecast looks pretty good for the weekend. It's amazing for us to have over 40,000 at Aviva. So So for us, it's just making sure that we do everything we can this week, albeit it's been a short week. When we were over in La Rochelle after the game last weekend, you know, regardless of how that game went, listen, we knew there was going to be something at stake this weekend. So, you know, we want to go out there, put in a big performance. So our preparation this week has been about trying to get the end result. But we still got to go through the process still between even now and the kickoff. So making sure we do the right thing and mentally that we're in the right place for this game, because we know Bath will be coming with, you know, lots to prove as well. You know, they obviously they're fighting for their lives in the competition still. They've got some players that have a pretty good inclination as to the way we do things, so which is always a danger, as we know, with obviously with Quinn Roo, but in particular Ross Maloney. So, and even Johan from his time in Munster would have encountered us quite a lot. So, yeah, listen, it's a great challenge for us, but listen, we're excited, and it's great for us to again be down in the Aviva, and hopefully for the obviously the guys that are lucky enough to get selected to run out in front of what, over 40,000 people, which would be fantastic.
Now, I know if I talk to any of the props, they'll tell me they'd love to scrum all day. The backs will tell me they'd love to run the ball all day. As a second row aficionado, you must be kind of eagerly looking forward to your second row against their second row.
Yeah, listen, we think we've got some good quality guys there. You know, James and Joe obviously stood up last week well, in terms of, you know, we knew it was going to be a big physical battle against La Rochelle. I think it'll be a similar type of battle this weekend. You know, Bath, La Rochelle, that game was very evenly matched. Obviously, La Rochelle probably got into a bit of an early lead, but Bath sort of, they fought their way back into the game. Pretty brutal conditions that they played that game out, that first game in the rec, round one. So, yeah, like it's as I said, it's going to be a great challenge for our guys. RG off the bench, making sure that we're just delivering quality ball. What do you want from your second row, given that sort of winning momentum for your team, both sides of the ball? So when we've got possession, that we're making sure we're carrying hard and good work around the ruck in terms of some of the clean out, securing possession, all that glamorous stuff. And you know, that's how these games are won and lost, aren't they? So listen, we think we've got three good operators there. And hopefully you see that over the course of 80 minutes.
That's Leo Cullen chatting to Michael Corcoran today. Coverage of that game on RT Radio 1 as part of an extended Saturday Sport tomorrow. Likewise, RT 2 television, Ulster in action tonight. And despite losing their three games, they could still advance to the knockout stages. So loads of news across that on the RTE Sport social media channels. 8 o'clock kickoff at the Kingspan Stadium there in action against Exeter. And then we've got Connacht in Champions Cup action as well. And or Challenge Cup action, I should say. So busy night of rugby.
Can
to
I ask
come.
An innocent question about?
Go on.
About
I was going to tell people something about the rugby, but go on. You ask
about
me your
Leo
innocent question
on rugby, and it's just from a passing interest.
Yes,
but obviously very.
Is this a loaded question, and it's going to get me into trouble? Connacht away to Cardiff. Sorry, that's what I wanted to say. Go on anyway.
So he's in charge of the best team in Europe.
Yes. Well, he's in charge of one of the best teams in Europe.
Okay, and he hasn't won anything in 3 years.
Yes.
Now, I'm probably not comparing like with like, but at what stage does he, and I'm not wanting the man to come under pressure, but at what stage do questions,
asked? Oh, no, they do get
is
asked.
Is he in a strong
they
position?
They do get asked, yeah, of course they do. And nobody would ask them more than he himself, I think.
Okay.
But I think there is a factor around this that, like, Leinster had Stuart Lancaster there. He departed, obviously, to go to France, and they brought in Jacques Nienaber. So it's like, they have made changes to strengthen the coaching team. The problem you have is you're talking about, are they the best team in Europe or the best group of players in Europe? Because there's a difference. And the problem that I think Leinster have had in recent years is you fly through the URC and then you come to the South African teams and the big physical French teams, and you realise that the teams you're playing most weeks aren't testing you to the level that you need to be tested to get over those teams come April, May.
But you might learn that from one season and you can address it for the next season, but it's three seasons.
Can you address it when you... But the other thing as well is only one team can win this. You look at like the La Rochelle team that Ronan O'Gara is coaching. Phenomenal team of players.
No, I'm not.
I would discount... Maybe with the exception of Saracens, I would discount a lot of the English teams because Europe isn't as big an issue for them. Mm. The South African teams have been introduced and they're gone bullheaded to try and win a Champions Cup to justify the criticism of being there. So
I suppose where I'm coming at is obviously with the soccer world, you lose a few matches, and look at Arteta at the moment, right? It feels like he's a match away from a crisis, yet he's on the verge of winning the league.
Are PSG a failure because they've not won a Champions League? Was Pep a failure before Man City won a Champions League?
Yeah, so that's why I'm he would be the like for like if you take, but he has won one. He hasn't in the rugby.
But sure, Leinster have won how many European championships?
He hasn't won one the last couple of seasons, but he has won one.
Okay.
He's one of the few people to have won it as a player and a head coach. Should they beat Racing in Bilbao a couple of years ago?
But how long is it since they've won one? 3 years?
No, it's longer.
Okay.
Yeah.
But as you said, they've assembled the best group of players they've probably ever had.
Yeah, but only one team can win it every year.
No, I'm not saying that he should get the sack or anything
like
that.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just asking an innocent question.
No, I understand where the question's coming from. But it's a question that a lot of Leinster fans would ask.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not in that world.
Yeah, I know. But I think you need to look at...
questions get asked.
Yeah, but you need to look at the bigger picture and go, there is a style of rugby and a style of human being that they are coming up against in the latter stages that I wonder is the URC preparing them for.
Okay.
Can we have a clarification? I never said Judd Trump was in the top four snooker players of all time. Yeah, but you're getting WhatsApps.
I'm getting names here, yeah.
You're getting WhatsApps saying Damien O'Mara doesn't know what he's talking about.
Reardon won the World Championship.
I know he did, but I never said he was in the top four players of all time.
I'm saying by the time he finishes, he will be. Because the ones that are ahead of him at the moment, the Hurricane.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Jimmy White.
Yeah.
Higgins.
Yeah.
Mark Williams. Well, Ray Reardon.
I'm just telling
Trump
you.
Trump will trump all of them.
The person who's texting you, the next time I meet him on the road, I'll be expecting...
There's a few of them now. There's a group.
Oh, is there?
There's a gang of them coming after
me. You see, what? Coming after you or coming after me? Because it was my name was mentioned in that WhatsApp group you're in,
yes,
not your name.
Well, you know that.
And what I want to know is, how can any discerning man, listening to me with me Northside Dublin accent and you with your Sligo accent, and mistake what you said for what I said?
No, he didn't.
Telling you now, Specsavers for the hearing aids.
He says you know absolutely nothing about politics.
I know nothing about anything. I'm not here to know anything. I'm only here to ask questions. Right, it's 25 past six. There's not a child in the house washed, and we're going to talk soccer after the break.
RTE
2FM.
2FM. Game on.
Football.
Andrew, welcome back to the programme. We're going to chat about some of the big stories ahead of the weekend. Fergal's going to join us in just a moment, but we mentioned at the top of the programme that 9.5 year contract extension for Erling Haaland at Manchester City takes him up to 2034. His manager is Pep Guardiola.
It's a big show of faith by Erling, given we obviously know about the charges and we know what people are saying that might happen to the club if that goes wrong. That is a big statement by Erling and everybody to commit to something when we know.
Absolutely, it's what I said. It's the trust for the club to Erling, like, because you never know what can happen in the next year. So, but the club knows perfectly how professional it is. His commitment in every single game and every single day to show his talent, and of course for him, because you know in 10 years, man, wow, we never know what's going to happen. It's a long, long time. And always, in the short careers, always you have to say, okay, stay, we'll see what happened. And he proved what he wanted, and the trust, as I said before, was the trust with the club.
You're a manager, it's your job to get more out of players. What can he improve on?
In many things. So he's, of course, the club and the team, myself as a manager, we have to create environment like... create a lot of moments that he can intervene in when he is unstoppable, because there is the best. And we have to, of course, in the relation and more than that, understanding the game in general, what happened during the game, what is the decisions you have to take, you have to make. So I think but I think he's so young, still young, and I'm pretty sure with a mature that playing games and games and games, it's going to happen naturally.
You work with Erling Haaland every day. What motivates him? Is it trophies? Is it personally to get better? Is it milestones like goals? I mean, what do you see?
I don't know. I didn't speak from him about what is your motivation. I think he's winning the next game. His motivation is score goals. I know he helped us a lot being there and score goals. But I think when I don't have the feeling that he's a guy with the contract to say, okay, now I have this, I'm going to take a nap. I don't think it's not going to happen. I think he loves, you know, to play, and he's a huge competitor. But in the same time, the good moments and the bad moments have the ability to get it off immediately. His mindset is really good to forget what happened, in the good, in the bad, and thinking in the next.
You also have been a player, and now you're a long-time manager here. Have you ever known of a player commit their future to a club for anything like this length of time?
Have you seen a player extend 10 years contract?
What has to go into a player's thinking? Because you've been a player too, you've been in a dressing room.
I think he came from Norway. I think even maybe the weather here is better than he was born. And he settled perfectly. I think what happened is that he loves the club, the people he's around, He loves the Premier League. He loves to be here with him, his wife, and now his father. So I think he visualized that there is no better place that I could be right now in the next 10 years, I would say, you know? And that's why he and his family decide to do this step.
You weren't tempted by 10 years yourself when you extended earlier in the season?
Sorry?
You weren't tempted by 10 years extension yourself?
Well, next season now we do. If they still aren't here, we'll do 10 years. So he has to beat me.
There you go. So they've not gone away. Pep Guardiola chatting about Erling Haaland. Fergal Brennan is with us. Hiya, Fergal.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Good to talk to you, as always. We were debating at the top of the programme. What statement is Haaland or are Manchester City sending by the signing or the offering of a 9.5-year contract?
I think it's based around the fact that they're confident Pep Guardiola will rebuild in this transfer window over the summer. I've said multiple times that I still think they've got a role to play in the race for top four and the title race between now and the end of the campaign. But they've got a number of players that are the wrong side of 30, to use that kind of Premier League terminology. And they do need a refresh, particularly in certain parts of the team. And Guardiola's seen how quickly Arne Slot has adapted at Liverpool. He knows that Arsenal will continue to get stronger. Chelsea have done very well this season, obviously Real Madrid, Barcelona, etc. in terms of the Champions League. I think he wants another go. He wants another crack, another opportunity at developing a team that can dominate the Premier League again. He obviously, as he said himself there, won't be around as you'd anticipate Erling Haaland will be, but he wants to win more trophies. That's why he signed that contract extension. There's obviously still the speculation over the charges hanging over their heads, but the more noises that I'm hearing from Manchester City, they are confident that they will be punished for it, but it won't be a end of days scenario, and it certainly wouldn't be if Guardiola and Haaland are both committing their future to the club.
Okay, you go along with a lot of that.
That's fair, yeah.
Yeah. To look at the weekend, Fergal, like obviously Liverpool, the team to catch. We've been speculating across the week if it's a situation of what points Liverpool will drop, the others will just simply drop more between now and season end. But are they a team that's in a need to get some level of momentum back?
There's been a little bit of a wobble in the last couple of weeks since the start of 2025. A couple of draws in the Premier League with Forest and United, and losing to Spurs in the Carabao Cup. So based on their incredibly high standards from the first half of the season, this is the sticky period that we've expected from every team that's always pushing for a Premier League title. I still think the big number as it stands is that game in hand over Arsenal. There was so much talk after they beat Spurs in midweek that the gap is down to 4 points, but Liverpool still have that game in hand. Win that, and, you know, expect them to win the majority of games that they have between now and the end of the season. That immediately becomes 7 points, and the perception of the situation completely changes. It's a difficult game for them tomorrow at Brentford, who ironically were fantastic at home in the first half of the season. Only Arsenal have picked up more points in home Premier League games. Now they've had a little bit of a dip at home, but they were good midweek against Manchester City to get back into it. And one thing that I really like about Thomas Frank and the team is they never lie down, particularly against the bigger teams, City, Liverpool, etc. They can be a goal down, two goals down. They'll keep fighting, they'll keep pushing. And we saw that on Tuesday night when they played Man City. Two goals after going 2-0 down at kind of 85-minute mark. They will fight and push and push and push. And Liverpool need to be ready for it. They had a bit of a test themselves against Forest. This is going to be another one tomorrow. And any drop points, Arsenal will be waiting and hoping from their perspective to pounce on it.
Are Liverpool showing a fragility, Alan?
Yeah, definitely. You'd have to say, based on the last few games that we've seen. I still think they'll score goals because of that attacking kind of threat that they pose. But just at the back recently, it's just a little bit, Fergal used the word wobble, and it has been a little bit of a wobble. And when you watch them, kind of you get that sense that teams are getting at them a lot easier than maybe they were earlier in the season. But that was to be expected, Damien. There was no way they were going to go through the season with the red hot form that they showed in the early part. So that's fine, it's just how you deal with that. And at the moment they're still fine because they're still top of the league with the game in hand, as Fergal says. But just, I felt that could be huge for Arsenal during the week, that win against Spurs, especially a goal down as well, because all of a sudden the gap is back to 4 points. you always feel when it's kind of 6 points with a game in hand, everybody suggests, well, that's too big of a stretch. That game in hand, as Ferg said, becomes all important now, but I always feel that whilst it's down to kind of 3-4 points, you always feel as though there's a race on. And I do think there is a race on, despite Arsenal's kind of, I mentioned earlier about it, Arteta almost feels like it's a game away from a crisis, yet they're still right in the mix to have a very good season. And I still have them, well, I tipped them at the start, I'm not going to change. I still think Arsenal have an unbelievable chance, despite the fact that they've no centre forward and they don't have their best player in Saka.
Let's hear from the Liverpool camp. So 4 points clear of Arsenal with a game in hand, and it's been pretty much plain sailing for Arne Slot so far. 14 wins from 20 games, just one defeat in the league. They're flying high in the Champions League as well. And he's been asked about the title race and maybe the obsession or the focus on the points they maybe have let slip in the last two games.
When the advantage at the top of the table does narrow the way it has, how does that impact the squad mentally, if at all?
I don't think we are as much as the media thinking about the league table every second of the day. We are trying to get the best out of the players, and with we, I mean my staff, and the players trying to get the best out of themselves every single day. And these players know how long the season still is and how many games they have to be in the best possible form to win something in the end of the season, which is not something that happens every single season. So we are not so focused on the league table as other people are. We are focused on getting a good training session today and getting a good game tomorrow. And as a result of that, we are hoping for a result. But the only way to get a result is to work on a daily basis in the best possible way.
When you see a Premier League rival investing in a player with a 10-year contract who's finalist in that fall, is that a reminder of just how good you have to be consistently season over season to be able to compete with some of that investment?
Not particular about the investments, but we know how good we have to be every single day to compete in this league. So it's not only the club you are now referring to. Chelsea also spent 1.2 billion, is that the way you say it over? Yeah. United spends an incredible amount. Every team spends a lot of money over here. That's why it's such an interesting league to be part of. And some season this club spends a bit more, the other season the other club spends a bit more. So that's what makes this league so intense and so difficult to win this league. And but that's also the reason why we all want to be here, because you want to compete against the best, with the best. And we are very happy with the team we are having at the moment. And we are still able to compete with all these teams that are spending incredible amount of monies.
That's Arne Slot. Very briefly on this, like, he's yet to have a crisis. He's yet to have a real issue of, and we've talked about the squad depth, and, you know, it'd be interesting to see how he reacts if those two back-to-back draws turn into two or three drop points in five games.
Yeah, and to be fair to him, Damien, they were two tough games. Obviously, Forest are having a season of their lives at the moment, so that was a tough game. And to be fair to Liverpool, only for the goalkeeper, they would have won the match. They were so strong towards the end of the game in particular, couple of cleared off the line, but Matt Sells had a great game. So I'm kind of the opposite in listening to that interview. I'm looking at the points that they've accumulated. 47 points out of 60. Like, he came in to a really difficult job trying to fill the shoes of one of the most kind of most eccentric characters we've ever seen in the Premier League, with such a presence and an aura at one of the biggest clubs in the world. And he's taken to it like a duck to water. He's so measured and balanced in that press conference. He spoke about the media's obsession with league tables and points, and obviously we have to talk about all that stuff. But just in terms of him and the job that he has done, and we're kind of phrasing the narrative tonight around a wobble and a couple of draws and are they struggling, but he's done an unbelievable job, Damien. He really has, and that should be acknowledged. Now, whether they get over the line and go on and finish the job, that remains to be seen. But for a fellow who's taken over from Jurgen Klopp and come into a brand new league, and he speaks about all the other clubs and the money they've spent, and I know he had a ready-made team, an assembled team, but you still have to manage it and put your own little slant on. He's done an unbelievable job.
Fergal, to go through one or two of the other matches, and again to talk about the media coverage and the media obsession, it feels Mikel Arteta, he's only ever one result away from a crisis, irrespective of what Arsenal are doing on the grander scheme of things.
I think a lot of that, again, is based around media perceptions and also just his personality. He's a very intense character. Any dealings I've had with him in press conferences, he's very focused, very serious. He does crack the occasional joke, but I think that's the way that he operates, and I think he runs his team like that as well. They're very, very serious, they're very organised. We know obviously all the stuff with set pieces, etc. There's always this real sense of planning. You certainly get that vibe from him, and when you watch Arsenal, that everything is measured. And when the plan doesn't really work out and they lose or they kind of give away a goal that they don't expect to, that's when you kind of see the weakness of Arteta, because he's so meticulous in what he does, that sometimes the kind of reaction to a situation going against him or against his team is a bit of an issue. And I said it last year, that's alongside obviously the titles, etc. But in terms of on a basic level, that's a real gap between him and Klopp's and Guardiola's, etc., where these are managers that in the middle of a game, even with all their best laid plans in place, they've got a way to change it, whether it's motivation, substitution, whatever, that they can do something. And I still think there's that gap there with Arteta. Mm. They're right in the mix. Again, the gap, as we keep talking about, is there. Tough game at the weekend against Aston Villa, but I just think their home record is so strong. 23 points from home games this season. Nobody's picked up more. I do fancy them to just about get it, but I think this is a weekend where things could maybe change a little bit. I think Liverpool are going to have it tough at Brentford.
Okay, United at home to Brighton, Alan, on Sunday, 2 o'clock kickoff. Are United back? And should Joshua Zirkzee be the player of the season with how he has bounced back from the absolute humiliation that his own fans bestowed upon him?
Ah, well, come here, like them two questions. Are the United back? So that's crazy talk. And should he be the player of the season?
No, but my point more is, for a young lad who had to endure what he had to endure and how he's reacted, stood up, showed balls that other United players haven't shown by taking the penalty against Arsenal. In an era where you would be entitled to turn around and go, listen, good luck to you, stuff you, I'm not going to make an effort here.
Yeah.
For a lad of his age, he has bounced back in a way that far more seasoned professionals wouldn't.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Damien. And
I phrased it differently that time. It made more sense.
I was very critical of Amorim actually here after he did that, because if you remember that game, it was against Newcastle and they were getting destroyed after 25 minutes. But a lot of that was down to the manager and the team he picked, Eriksen and Casemiro, as the two in midfield, and they were absolutely destroyed by three of the best midfielders in England in Joe Linton, Bruno Guimaraes, and Tonali that night. So a lot of that was on him. Yet, as you say, he publicly humiliated that young boy, and that could have been the end of him, Xerxes. But to be fair to him, he has bounced back. He took the penalty. But the big thing for me, even with him, the character he showed even coming off the bench last night, everybody will go on about Ahmad and scoring the goals, but he changed the game because he gave them a presence up the pitch. All of a sudden there was balls going into him that he was able to bring midfielders into the game, get them high up the pitch and cause all sorts of problems. So he does deserve credit. But look, he was a big money signing, Damien. He's there to make a difference, and you have to, I suppose, live with the pressures and the expectation that's on you as well if you're going to a big club. And that's been a major problem for a lot of the players that have signed for Man United, whether the recruitment was right or bad, but a lot of them have crumbled under that scrutiny. So it's good to see him showing that character. But looking at them last night, like, people thinking they're back after the two good results in the previous weeks, but they were all over the place again last night. Southampton should have been 2 or 3 up, never mind one at half time. So he's slowly but surely getting there, the manager, but it's going to take so much time.
But Zirkzee, 23-year-old, who has had to deal with everything that he's had to deal with, I think, you know, if there's a character of a season, he deserves it for the character he's shown in recent weeks.
It's only been three games.
No, but it's not that. He became the personification of United's failures.
But I think the fans overreacted as well.
But he still had to endure it.
Yeah.
And you saw the impact it had on him. And you look at a situation where we're talking about players throwing the toys out of the pram. Mm. At 23 years of age, at a new club, in a new city, in a new country, he showed
character.
But I
think that's good to see, Damien.
I agree with you. And my point is, he deserves to be acknowledged for that, where he became the pantomime villain unnecessarily of all that's been wrong at Man United.
Fair.
To finish, back to Merseyside, Fergal. Spurs away to Everton. Ange Postecoglou looks like a man who just needs to be put out of his misery with his post-match interviews. He's going up against David Moyes, who's going to want to hit the ground running in terms of his Everton revolution. It's going to be compelling to watch the sideline as much as the action on the field.
It is, because we're potentially looking at a situation of two extremes from managers. One manager back in the door at his old club, and one manager, potentially, even regardless of the result this weekend, who could be edging towards the exit door at Tottenham. The press conference from Postecoglou after the Arsenal game was telling, and this has been a slide in the recent weeks where he's getting more and more dour, and you can see he's wearing it on his face, the pressure, the questions that are being asked about him, his players, and he is in a very difficult situation. Tottenham have got one of the longest injury lists in the Premier League, But I still think the players that are in the team, and some of them are experienced players, are just not pulling hard enough for him. There's been so much focus on the young guys, Archie Gray, Lucas Bergvall. I think they've done okay, particularly Bergvall's been really impressive. There's still plenty of experience in that team that are not doing enough for a manager who's under massive pressure. As for Everton, David Moyes, the Villa game wasn't the result that he wanted, but he was quite clear that the glaring issue for Everton is a lack of quality in creating goals and finding someone that can just stick the ball in the back of the net. Dominic Calvert-Lewin missed, I think, four really big chances, and there's been question marks over him for some time. So I'm still confident that Moyes will have enough to keep Everton up. Obviously, that's the massive focus, get to the new stadium in the Premier League, but they need to find a goal scorer before the end of the month.
Fergal, enjoy the weekend's action. Thanks so much for being with us. Fergal Brennan there. Alan Colley's. It's one of my great enjoyments is to wind you up and just spar it out with you on the radio.
I love it.
We've had the bit of crack.
I love it.
Now, I want you to clarify all those...
Trump's going
to
be a great...
Those statements that were made about me in your WhatsApp group, which are completely wrong. Listen, we'll chat soon.
Thank you.
Alan Colley with us. We're going to finish the programme with racing. We're going to hear from Jane Mangan after the break.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
Racing.
And it's time to look ahead to the weekend's action. Jane Mangan is with us as always. Hiya, Jane.
Damien, I'm very well. I'm very pleased to not be frozen.
Well, listen, isn't that a good way to be now? But listen, it wouldn't be the same were you not out braving the elements, enjoying this sport that you love so much.
Yeah, and I will be out on Sunday for Racing TV at Thurles. We can talk about the Grade 1 at Ascot in a moment, but there is a race in Thurles called the Horse and Jockey Hotel this Sunday at 2 o'clock. And it's basically a mini Ryanair. Willie Mullins fields four runners. Kilcrut, Classic Getaway, Appreciated and Blood Destiny. Gavin Cromwell's got Visionarian in there. Mouse Mars, the local trainer for Thurles, has got French Dynamite. And throw in Delta Work. That's a proper, proper race. It's a Grade 2, the Horse and Jockey Hotel. That, for me, is a mini Ryanair. And then a half an hour before that, we have the Mayor's Chase, a Grade 2 as well. Only by Night, Bloomfield Bijou, just to see as Allen and a penny 100. There's a couple of really good fillies in that. If you're not out and about, if you are out and about, if you're not too busy on Sunday, you could do worse than paying Thurles a visit.
And the issue at the back of all this, and we talked about the basketball cup finals on the programme last night and the importance of the next generation being able to get out and see firsthand the best there are in the business. And when we think about Thurles, we don't necessarily think about massively impressive race days. And it's really important that action like this is spread around the country, and it's really important that you and I and people who are looking ahead to the races draw attention to the fact that there is such a great card for people in that part of the country to enjoy this weekend.
100%, and I know some of the major racetracks like Leopardstown, Punchestown, the Curragh, they're all in around Kildare and the Dublin area. But the one thing about racing, it is an internet, or it is a national sport. Obviously, in the summer, you can go down to Killarney and Listowel, and you can have various other tracks around the country. But I think this weekend, the place to be will be Thurles, and it's a race that has a really rich roll of honour. Alaho won it last year, winning it for a third time when he won it last year. Fakhar Dadari, Sizing John. Don Cossack used this as a springboard to win. He went on and won the Cheltenham Gold Cup. So you never quite know what you're going to see. And you also, if you're interested in the people as well as the horses, you're going to see the likes of Paul Town and Rachel Blackmore, Keith Donoghue, Sean O'Keefe, Danny Mullins, and all of the above. So there's no day off for them. This has been a busy week for anybody in racing, because there's been a lot of rescheduled meetings. All the meetings that were lost last week due to the snow and ice have been rescheduled this week.
And it's great to be able to enjoy it. It's great to be able to get out and see it. But from a jockey's perspective, you have to earn a crust. And I'm sure some of them might have been looking at the diary thinking, listen, I might have a bit of downtime there after Christmas. But isn't this the joys of the profession that they dedicate themselves to so much?
Yeah, well, you're making up for lost time, number one. But two, a lot of these horses have targets later on in the spring, and this is part of their schedule to get them there. So it's a bit like, you have a team playing the semi-final, the quarter-final, but to get to the final, you have to play those games. Mm. And a lot of these horses are doing that. And as I said, that Horse and Jockey Hotel is probably one of those races that will be a springboard to either the Dublin Racing Festival or indeed Cheltenham itself.
If I was to force you then to tell me one horse to watch out for in that, which is the one that's head and shoulders above the rest for you?
I don't think there's any horse head and shoulders above the rest. I think Delta Work is the class act, but I don't actually fancy him for the race, because I think they're working back from from Cheltenham. I think probably Blood Destiny. I think he's better than what we saw from him on his last run, and I think conditions should be ideal to suit for him over 2.5 miles. So if I was pushed, as you seem to be pushing me, I'd go for Blood Destiny.
There's people who, their Friday evening isn't the same without saying, sure, Jane Mangan was on the radio telling us to keep an eye out on this horse, so I'm only giving the people what they want.
I love that. There's definitely people who are just thinking, Jane Mangan, sure, like, she really wouldn't know. And you know what? More often than not, they'd be right.
But
so
you see,
we all have to have an opinion.
Well, come here. But this is where your modesty lets you down, because there's loads of other people would come along and go, sure, didn't I tell you last weekend that so-and-so were going to beat so-and-so? And didn't I tell you last weekend he was the player to watch? So, you know, maybe we need to start all these things with a review of the previous week and draw attention to all the great tips.
We definitely don't need to start.
Okay, right. Listen, yeah, you and I both. So listen, we'll stay at home. Like, obviously the card in Cork today is done and dusted. Dundalk is underway. Navan tomorrow, what catches your eye on that card, which is underway from 12 o'clock?
Well, Navan's a very good card as well, with quite big fields. The opening race is the one that I'm most interested in, with Sata Chance, James's Gate and Ballygunner Castle in that novice's hurdle. But I am aware that we have a set limited time to discuss things, Damien, and we have to talk about the match of the weekend, which is taking place at Ascot. Willie Mullins is taking over an Energumen, the twice champion chase winner from Cheltenham, 11 years young when he beat... he was going to beat Banbridge when he unseated the last in the Hillyway Chase, but he beat Dino Blue, as it subsequently reads in your form card, in the Hillyway Chase after over a year off. Energumen versus John Bond, who is an 8-time Grade 1 winner in the prime of his life now as a 9-year-old. And John Bond, it's hard to believe, 16 wins from 19 runs. He's only been beaten by Constitution Hill in the Supreme, by El Fabiolo in the Arkell, and by Elixir de Nuts, which was a shock that day in the Schlur when he jumped poorly. So he's only been beaten 3 times in his life. He's never been out of the first two. I know people are calling him and building it up to be a match. I would be shocked if a prime 9-year-old John Bond can't beat the now 11-year-old in Energumen. And at 1:40 at Ascot tomorrow is the Mare's Hurdle, which sees, for me, one of the most exciting mares that has probably not been talked about because of brighter days ahead, because of Lossiemouth, a horse called Caragazi. She followed home Sir Gino at Aintree. She followed home Mashborough in the Triumph at Cheltenham. Back in Mare's company, Caragazi for Willie Williams of Paul Town, and her first run of the season, she will be one of the stars of the season, I predict.
Oh yeah, because like two massively impressive wins last year, I think two good second place runs as well. So how much can you rely on the form of 2024 when it's been quite a break to see the first run for 2025?
Well, we know the form is very good because Mashborough has won over fences. We know Sir Gino has been eye-watering in his two runs this season. So to do what she's done, having raced quite unprofessionally last year, I think is a compliment to her. The way she races, the way she's so keen and so hard on herself, suggests to me she's not going to take the run, because she's one of those people, if she were a person, she'd be overworking herself. She'd be doing too much. You'd be always trying to tell her, would you listen to Enya and maybe drink a glass of wine? That's the kind of person she'd be. I'd say she's in the gym constantly, and she's odds-on favourite. Nobody's going to make any money off her, but watch her with a view to the future preference. If people are talking about brighter days ahead and Lossiemouth going to the Mares as a champion, well, if they came up against this one in the Mares, they might just know about it.
There's a beautiful insight into how you wind down from a weekend's racing now come Sunday evening. But before I let you go, I was looking at the Clarence House earlier, and Willie owned this race with on the show, obviously with Ruby and Paul Townend a couple of years ago, and I can't believe it's 2018 since there's been an Irish winner, because it was a race that, you know, he dominated it after taking the mantle from Paul Nicholls. And for all that Willie Mullins has achieved, one would imagine this weekend it has to be a big one in the diary to say, listen, I wouldn't mind bringing that trophy home again after so long.
Yeah, that's a fair point. There was a vintage renewal 3 years ago, 2022, when Shishkin and an Argument met there. It was a real match between the pair of them. But subsequent to that, Editor de Gite, Elixir de Nuts, they're not particularly wonderfully strong stars. I think, was it 2019 when Altior went head-to-head with Undeso? Was that one of the matchups as well? So it fits for an Argument's preparation. A lot of these two-milers wait for the Dublin Racing Festival. So that's why we often don't get an Irish horse over there. And that's probably why an Irish horse hasn't won it since Undeso in 2018.
Next week, we'll find out your favourite Enya album. We'll leave that for now. We'll leave people hanging on that.
Only one. Time.
Okay. There, listen, I didn't expect you to answer that quickly. My God. God, you must send me on your Spotify Wrapped at the end of the year now.
It's a song. Yeah, I'm not a big Enya fan and I don't actually drink wine, but I just figured that would be appropriate for that particular filly.
Okay. Well, listen, I like your analogy. Jane, enjoy the weekend. Thanks for being with us as always.
Thanks, Damien.
That's Jane Mangan there. It's been suggested that there's either something in the water or a full moon tonight based on the creativity and flourishes that we've enjoyed from our various guests over the course of the programme. So we will leave you in the capable hands of Blona Tracy to try and bring a bit of broadcasting decorum back to 2FM. DJ Wax will be here after nine, so the chart show with Blona to come. Leon Dunn, our broadcast coordinator tonight. Ronan Lawler produced the programme. From Damien O'Mara, all of us here till we chat again. Good night.
RTE 2FM.